Thank you all so much for coming. It was a really beautiful day today. It's been kind of cold up in Fairbanks, and it was kind of cold last night when I drove down, and today it was beautiful, so I especially appreciate that you're here on a beautiful evening like this to celebrate writing and think about Denali and climate change. And I want to tell you, this is a really long essay, and don't worry, I'm not going to read it all. It's about 23 typewritten pages, double-spaced. So I made a little sort of revised or excerpted version, and I'm going to skip some parts, and I'll tell you when I'm skipping them, and maybe someday you'll want to read the whole thing online. It's called Denali Thinking Like a Glacier. It has two epigraphs at the beginning, two quotations. So I'll read those. A deep, chesty howl echoes from rim rock to rim rock, rolls down the mountain, and fades into the far blackness of the night. It is an outburst of wild, defiant sorrow and of contempt for all the adversities of the world. Every living thing, and perhaps many a dead one as well, pays heed to that call. Only the mountain has lived long enough to listen objectively to the howl of a wolf. Thinking Like a Mountain, Aldo Leopold, 1944. And the other epigraph is this. We're in a different climate regime up here. Rob Burrows, Denali National Park and Preserve, 2014. One. On any day or night of the year, I like to park at the pullout on the west end of the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus, high on the sacred hill called Troth Yada, Wild Potato Hill. This is the place, named by Tanana Athabascans, where elders in the past came to discuss problems and the concerns of the many groups of Native peoples in the interior of Alaska. It was a coming-together place, not just for gathering food such as wild potatoes, but as one Athabascan elder expressed in 2009, a place for wisdom sharing and good feeling, good thinking, and working together. Mindful of this sacred history, I like to climb out of my car and scan the length of the Alaska Range. This, I admit, I do with hungry eyes. On the summer solstice, June 21st, in the afternoon, say, the view of spiky, glacier-covered Deborah, Hess, and Hayes, 100 miles south as the raven flies, is often hazy or even obscured due to moisture in the air, wildfire smoke, or billowing thunderheads and patchy sheets of rain. Late in the evening, though, say 10 or 11 o'clock, lit with the midnight sun, the entire range may emerge, clear and sharp, awash in a rosy light. Even elusive Denali, the high one, or great one, the tallest peak in North America, will be sailing on its massive granite base, its glacier-covered Pluton, far to the right, seemingly just beyond the outcrop of Chena Ridge and the braids of the silty Tanana River. Or say it's the opposite end of the year, winter solstice, December 21st, when the temperature in the hills around Fairbanks is 0 degrees Fahrenheit, or minus 20, or minus 40. Sometimes when I park at the pullout, all the mountains lie hidden behind a sinister scrim of wood-burning, power plant, automobile, truck, bus, fine particulates. Occasionally, everything beyond this sacred hill can be lost in ice fog or thick falling snow. But sometimes, the sky turns cranberry red at sunrise, 11, frosty pink and pale yellow by 2, cobalt and black by 5, with a moon, silver stars, and later the northern lights, shimmering chartreuse overhead. Whatever the season or the weather, often I'm glad that my little log cabin perches on the northwest side of Chena Ridge and not the south. For I think I'd have trouble trying not to stare and stare at this priceless, ever-changing Alaska Range view. 2. People who study glaciers, glaciologists, geophysicists, geologists, become attached to their glaciers, I suppose, in a similar way. They interact with their subjects from season to season, year in and year out, until they've developed, unconsciously, subconsciously, a relationship. I know this is true, for I've observed how they write and speak of it. reflecting reverence and respect, excitement and wonder in their voices and eyes. Clearly, they value their work. I think it must be hard, then, for such scientists to be witnessing the slow and fast thinning, nay, perhaps disappearance, of glaciers all over the world. 3. The Earth today is covered about 71% by water, most of it in the oceans, and about 29% by land. Of this land surface area, about 10%, or 6 million square miles, is covered by glaciers, ice fields, and ice sheets. This glacial ice blankets Antarctica and parts of Greenland, Iceland, Canada, Russia, and Alaska, and it exists in additional mountainous regions on every continent except Australia. In the European Alps, for instance, there are more than 1,200 valley glaciers. Scientists estimate, however, that by 2025, the glaciers in the Alps will have lost more than 90% of the ice that was in them a century before. In fact, as global temperatures rise throughout the current century due to global warming and climate change, significant portions of the two major ice sheets remaining on Earth, in Greenland and Antarctica, are expected to melt. Since glacial ice holds 75% of the world's freshwater supply, many scientists and others expect the melting to result in substantial loss of freshwater into the oceans, significant sea level rise, and major flooding of the coastlines and islands of every continent. 4. I learned only recently that Alaska has an estimated 100,000 glaciers. Wow. Some are named, but most are not. Together, they cover 29,000 square miles, or about 5% of Alaska's total land surface. In comparison to the 5.4 million square miles of the Antarctic ice sheet, these statistics may seem minuscule. But the importance of glaciers to Alaska's land-based and ocean-based ecosystems is not minuscule. And to me, Denali, the mountain, is not minuscule either. The High One is a glacial world incarnate, ever white, ever cold and moving, literally and figuratively. At 20,320 feet, this mountain is higher than any of the 13,000 and 14,000 foot peaks in the Rocky Mountains that I climbed, huffing and puffing, with my father when I was growing up in Colorado. Since moving to Alaska in 1986, nearly 29 years ago, I have camped numerous times right next to Denali, on its north side at Wonder Lake Campground and in backcountry areas of the park, and on Denali's south side along the Kasugi Ridge Trail and elsewhere. In all sorts of weather and gear, mosquito covered and not, I have stood or sat spellbound with binoculars, glassing the mountain's glacier covered base and flanks and summits. A careful look at my new fangled, laminated topo map of the park reveals names for some of the glaciers that have blanketed the mountain since at least the last Pleistocene ice age and that are still flowing down its sides. The Harper Glacier, the Muldrow, the Kahiltna, Trelaika, Peters, and Ruth. But what about Denali now in the 21st century? Am I glassing a melting mountain? 5. The iconic image of a steep glacier face calving huge chunks of ice into the ocean cannot be seen in the Alaska Range, of course, because the landlocked Alaska Range doesn't have maritime or tidewater glaciers. Most of Alaska's glaciers lie near the coasts. Still, glaciers in Denali National Park cover 1 million acres, or 1/6 of the park's total surface, and the park is nearly the same size in area as the state of Massachusetts. According to modern mapping, based on the interpretation of satellite imagery, in 2010, there were 881 glaciers in the park. These 881 glaciers are remains of the very large Alpine and Piedmont glaciers that covered the Alaska Range as recently as 20,000 years ago. In his book, Sculpted by Ice, Glaciers and the Alaska Landscape, Michael Collier describes Piedmont glaciers this way. Quote, a Piedmont glacier is a thick, continuous mass of ice resting on relatively flat land near the base of a mountain range. Piedmont glaciers are fed by other glaciers that deliver ice from nearby mountains. what was previously an ice field of large alpine and Piedmont glaciers blanketing the north side of the Alaska Range, an ice field that expanded and contracted numerous times over a period of 3 million years, is now, although it might not appear so to the uninformed viewer, a patchwork of remnants. So my mountain is melting, or has melted already in the big geological scale picture. But what about now? What am I seeing when I look at Denali now? And how might that image change in 100 years or in 10,000? 6. The simple answer to these questions is that right now, glaciers in Denali National Park and Preserve are shrinking. Research shows that most of the large glaciers that originate from the cold high elevations of Denali, the mountain, and from other high elevations in the Alaska Range are showing signs of thinning and retreat. At the same time, though, things are more complicated and unpredictable than this. And here's why. And now I'm going to skip about 8 pages, the rest of this section, which is section 6 and section 7, and go on to 8. And later, if you'd like to hear each of those 6 glaciers that I named on Denali, their voices are in those pages that I'm skipping. And here's 8. Rob Burrows works about 80 miles from the mountain. His office is inside Denali National Park headquarters at mile 3.4 of the 92-mile graveled park road. Near the end of this road, drivable only in summer and mostly only by park buses and other permitted vehicles, lies the primitive Wonder Lake campground, plus a backcountry ranger station, the swift and silty braids of the McKinley River, the brown and green snout of debris-covered Muldrow Glacier, and, if not obscured by clouds or fog, close-up views of snow and ice-covered Denali, looming from its base at about 2,000 feet, up 18,000 feet more, to a vertical rise more stupendous than that of Mount Everest. Like many scientists, Rob spends a lot of time in his office at the computer. Sometimes, though, he gets to be outdoors in the field, gathering data and making observations about the currently 881 glaciers in the park and preserve. I know his voice through the telephone, email, his writings on the internet, and several of his published scientific papers. I'm young, I suppose, Rob says, younger than the things I study, anyway. I do long-term monitoring of glaciers in Denali National Park and Preserve. The main question I investigate is this: how much ice is the glacier losing, and what is the rate of change of that loss? The park has hundreds of glaciers in all shapes and sizes, from tiny little things to the Kahiltna Glacier, 45 miles long. Glaciers aren't as solid as they look. Not only do they have water running beneath them, they have a whole network of holes and crevasses and tunnels and conduits like a plumbing system. Every glacier is different, and Denali's glaciers are not like the coastal glaciers of much of the rest of Alaska, nor are they like the glaciers of Greenland or Antarctica. We're in a different climate regime up here. Elevations are high for many of the glaciers, and conditions are cold for much of the year. The glaciers on the east side of the park, however, are generally at lower elevations. The lower elevation and smaller glaciers in the park seem to be dramatically thinning. One way we're observing this is by using repeat comparative photography. Historical photographs of glaciers taken in the 1950s or earlier are compared with more recent or current photographs taken from the same vantage points. A dramatic example of lower elevation glacier change is the East Teklanika Glacier, a small valley glacier that has retreated a great deal in the last century. Other striking examples of lower elevation glacier change include the Toklat, Polychrome, West Fork Cantwell, Sunset, and Hidden Creek glaciers. With funding from the National Park Service, researchers from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Alaska Pacific University have completed an inventory of all glaciers in Denali using 2010 satellite imagery. Their studies show that the area of glaciers in the park decreased by 8% between 1952 and 2010, with most of this loss occurring on small to medium-sized glaciers at mid-elevations, about 4,500 to 5,900 feet. A few glaciers increased in area, but this was due to surging, most notably the Muldrow and Peters glaciers. For the higher elevation, larger glaciers, changes are not so dramatic as for the lower elevation, smaller glaciers. At least, not yet. Also, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, or PDO, is important to consider. Climate in much of Alaska is strongly driven by seasonal to decadal variations in sea surface temperature of the Pacific Ocean. The PDO is an index that tracks anomalies or deviations in Pacific Ocean sea surface temperatures. The PDO oscillates between positive and negative phases on a 20 to 30 year cycle. In Alaska, the positive phase of the PDO generally corresponds with higher air temperatures, particularly winter temperatures, and increased cloudiness and precipitation, whereas the negative phase tends toward cooler and drier climate averages. The PDO has had a significant effect on the park's glaciers in the past, and we recently moved into a new phase again. But how will this phase pan out, overlain by the effects of global warming? There's a lot to continue studying and learning about the glaciers in Denali. And now I'm going to skip to section 9. And I'm going to skip section 11, which is how the essay ends. And you can find that out later. And just read section 10. Yeah, I'm skipping 9 and going over to 10. A new geologic epoch is born when a big change occurs. It's not always easy to determine when that big change starts, nor when it ends. This is the case with the Holocene, and with what some scientists and others are now calling the Anthropocene. The Pleistocene epoch is easier to pin down. Today, most researchers agree that the Pleistocene spanned from 2.6 million to 11,700 years ago. Glaciers and the appearance of humans distinguish this time span. During this epoch, most of Earth's ice ages occurred as glaciers and ice sheets advanced during periods of cooling and retreated during periods of warming. Evidence of Homo sapiens appears in the fossil record during the late Pleistocene, about 200,000 years ago. The human species grew and expanded, and by the end of the epoch, people had spread through much of the world. According to the International Union of Geological Sciences, or IUGS, the professional organization that defines the Earth's timescale and confers its names, the Earth is now in the Holocene epoch. This time span began 11,700 years ago, at the end of the last major ice age, and the epoch has been notable so far for the retreat of glaciers and the societal evolution of humans, including the establishment of major civilizations and the development of human knowledge and technology. Some scientists believe, however, that a new geologic epoch is now in progress. They argue that this time span began when humans permanently altered the Earth, and that this change can be dated in the form of sediment layers and other geological features from about 1800, the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in Europe. They call this new epoch the Anthropocene, from the Greek anthropos, meaning human. Examples of human-caused alteration, they say, include urbanization, agriculture, soil erosion, deforestation, depletion and pollution of groundwater, extinction of species caused by hunting and destruction of habitat, ocean acidification and dead zones, rises in sea level and global temperature, and rises in greenhouse gases, notably carbon dioxide and methane, due to the burning of fossil fuels. These scientists and other researchers, thinkers, and ordinary citizens are not talking about non-human nature triggering such changes. They are identifying Homo sapiens as the major cause. I've not met Rob Burrows yet, the scientist at Denali National Park. I've only talked with him by telephone and read his words. In one of his emails to me, he wrote, quote, "The Alaska Range has existed and been growing for about 6 million years. So I suspect the high one has been draped by ice and eroded by ice for all of its life, but in varying amounts through the glacial and interglacial periods of the Pleistocene." I don't know whether Rob ever uses the term Anthropocene when documenting his glacier research, and that probably doesn't much matter yet. The IUGS says it will decide by 2016 whether to endorse the new epoch name. What matters to me is what Rob meant when I asked on the phone what he would most like people to understand about climate change, glaciers, and Denali. Regarding rapid climate warming on an Earth-wide basis, Rob stated, quote, "The cause is unequivocally anthropogenic." Regarding glacier ice loss in Denali National Park, though, the situation is tricky. What proportion is anthropogenic, and what proportion is PDO, Pacific Decadal Oscillation related? Even the big glaciers on Denali, like the Ruth and Kahilna, are thinning, Rob said. Here we have this really high elevation cold mountain, and even there, the glaciers are thinning. There is no way to disprove, not yet anyway, that this change is anthropogenic. And we're seeing such changes all over the world. I guess I'd like people to think about that and start paying attention. Thanks.